Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfest, no relationship to Kim Jong-un. I'm a left-wing pundit and a writer at The Atlantic and Vogue.
And I'm Andy Levy, former Fox News and CNN HLN guy and current cable news conscientious objector.
And I'm producer Jesse Cannon, and I'm here to make sure things don't go too far off the rails.
We're here to have fun, smart conversations with the wisest and funniest people in science and media and politics that help make what's happening today clearer.
Our world has been turned upside down, and on The New Abnormal, we'll talk about the people who got us into this mess and how we'll hopefully get ourselves out of it.
Hello, and welcome to another Sunday bonus episode of The New Abnormal, and we thank you so much for being here. Today, we have an extra special guest with Katie Turr, who's, of course, a correspondent for NBC News and the anchor of MSNBC Reports. But today, Molly's going to talk to her all about her new book, Rough Draft, a Memoir. But first, let's have some fun. All right, you guys ready to listen to some clips?
Are we ever? Oh, we are. I mean, we are.
Okay, good.
We very much are, Molly.
Yes, we love it.
Show favorite, Judge Box of Wine. Haven't had her in a while. She's got some theories on all this Ukraine money and Hunter Biden.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
The United States, this is a sad commentary. He's got a gun. He's a sex addict. He's a drug addict. He was dishonorably discharged from the military. This is a guy. By the way, why did we recently send $44 million or was it $1 billion to Ukraine? Why, a couple of weeks ago, the cash? Why are we sending that to Ukraine? Why were we so late in sending ammunition to Ukraine? If Hunter Biden is the guy who tells his father what to do and when to do it, you have to wonder, is he behind the policy making with China, Ukraine, and Russia, where he made millions? It is a sad state.
Here's what I've decided, guys. Tell me if you think this is good. I think we need to, and I think Hunter Biden needs to agree to this, we need to give him to the conservatives. He needs to be Jesus, and he needs to be given to the conservatives for our sins or whatever. And they can do to him whatever they want, and then they're not allowed to complain about him anymore and bring him up ever again and waste our fucking time with this guy.
I have to tell you, I'm so impressed with how much they think we care about Hunter Biden.
That's what I'm saying. I know.
Like, anytime they're like, well, what about Hunter Biden? You're like, okay, lock him up. Like, I don't care.
That's what I'm saying. Right. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Take him.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, don't threaten me with a good time. Like, I don't care. I mean, you know, he's been on the podcast, and I respect that decision, but, you know, that's where it ends.
They always think it's some. It's this huge gotcha for them. It's their new Benghazi. It's like, right, you know, what about Hunter Biden? Fine. Everything you think Hunter Biden did.
Yeah, you can have him.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Court-martial
him. Lock him up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Throw him in Gitmo. He should agree to all of this for the good of the country. He needs to sacrifice himself.
Or whatever. He doesn't have to agree. We don't care.
No, and if he doesn't, that's fine too. But I think he should.
Yeah.
And then we're done with Hunter Biden. You can't bring him up anymore. We gave you that one, and now you don't get to talk about him anymore. You don't get to what about him.
Yeah.
You know, every time one of your people does something god-awful, which is every 42 seconds.
Listen, I think that, you know, Hunter Biden, it's like when I was on the radio with this horrible guy who was screaming at me on Canadian radio, and he was saying to me, like, the January 6th committee doesn't do anything about inflation. That's what it's like. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, well, Herschel Walker has 15 children, but what about Hunter Biden?
As a content producer, what I could just never believe is that it's been years of her being on the air having these just rants like that. And they're like, yeah, no notes. Just keep going. Keep doing that thing.
Yeah.
like it never gets better, ever.
You guys, I just want to say one thing. The Five is a highly rated Fox show and sometimes beats one Tucker Carlson. Oh, in the ratings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's not the worst person on it.
Oh, no. She's absolutely not. She's like the third worst person on it.
Well, as someone who's known also for being pretty bad with their alcohol consumption, there is somebody whose reputation's beating her these days, which is one Rudolph Giuliani, and he has theories on who's really behind January 6th.
Of the obvious point that this was something that was put together by the left movement, it doesn't necessarily only mean Antifa. It means others that were trying to do anything they can to destroy any attempt that Trump had to rectify the massive voter theft. It was clearly a frame-up, like Russian collusion, like the innocent Ukrainian conversation, on and on and on. That means people are expert at trying to frame Donald Trump.
I just want to say, as a New Yorker, we need to stop having mayors.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
We need a full stop on my city electing mayors until we figure out what the hell is going on here.
Yes, exactly. No more elections until we figure out what the hell is going on with our mayor problem. I mean, Rudy is the worst one.
Andy L. Levy is calling for a total and complete shutdown of New York mayors entering Gracie Mansion.
No more mayors until we figure out what the hell is going on.
It's the only thing. I think I've said this before, maybe on Twitter, but we need every 6 months a different bodega cat should be mayor. And that's just how we should conduct our business because they're
too good for us, those bodega cats.
Well, that is true. We could not ever meet their high standards, but my God.
When you think about people we've had as mayor, it almost negates any good qualities that the entire city has, that we have elected just the clowniest of clowns.
I don't know how far back I would have to go I mean, granted, I'm only like 32, but...
Yeah, right, exactly. So
I'm not even sure if in my lifetime we've had a decent mayor.
Like Napoleon. Around the time of the Napoleonic Wars, there were good mayors in New York City.
Molly, do you miss Mayor LaGuardia doing his...
You know what? Go fuck yourself.
Radio reads.
By the way, I just would like to point out I'm much younger than Andy Levy, and he says this. Because it's witchcraft and trickery.
Okay, well, throw off the scent here. I'm going to also play somebody else throwing off the scent. Rep LaMalfa, speaking of last episode when we were talking about the backbenchers, he has some thoughts on what's more important than the January 6th committee.
So what are we doing? What are we doing? Chasing January 6th. Look at our border right now. We're under the current Biden policies. We're attracting the largest caravan ever of illegal aliens heading towards our border. The idea that we're going to get rid of Title 42 or just the general porosity of the border anyway.
They love that border. Here's the thing about the border. Biden, and again, this is not an endorsement of Biden, nor is it an endorsement of Trump, but Biden has Trump's border policies. They can't, Title 42 is not happening. Nothing is happening. It's the same as it was under Trump, except they're not gassing people, you know, but that's it.
Yeah. I just like if you ever woke up from a coma and you put on the news and you saw someone mention a caravan, you would, at the very least, you would know it was an election year.
Yeah, exactly.
Every 2 years, there's a caravan issue. And it's like clockwork.
It's very true. It's happening. You know it. Because you see that the January 6th committee hearings are happening because they're talking about the caravan.
Yeah, it's a great distractor. By the way, I was curious where he was from, and he's from California's first congressional district, which you would think, California shares a border with Baja California, which is Mexico, et cetera. So you would think, that makes sense. Yeah, he's barely south of Oregon.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the fact that California has any Republican Congress people is a failing on our part as Democrats.
At least on gerrymandering.
Yes.
So speaking of there being two totally different realities, we often on this podcast complain about one Merrick fucking Garland not doing his job. Well, Lion Ted has some other thoughts on what Merrick Garland is doing.
And Merrick Garland has become perhaps the most political attorney general in the history of this country. He's willing to weaponize the Department of Justice and FBI to target parents as domestic terrorists, but he refuses to enforce the law against the people flagrantly violating the law. And Jen Psaki at the White House encourages people, go and protest at the justice's house.
I don't think she's doing that.
I don't even... I think he might be the most morally bankrupt person in the country. Like, is he the most morally bankrupt living American?
Is this Lion Ted?
That was Lion Ted.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he knows, because he's not stupid. He's not stupid. I mean, it'd be close. It's like, and he doesn't believe this shit. Like, Tucker Carlson, I'm now convinced, believes the absolutely ridiculous shit. I think he does. He believes a lot of it anyway. Or at least believes the principles behind it. Principles in air quotes there.
He might be a racist.
Yes, exactly. Ted doesn't believe any of this shit.
Ted is just trying to get famous. Like, at this point,
right.
He does the podcast. He has this podcast. He goes on all the, like, Ben Shapiro-style podcasts.
He has one at the Michael Knowles now.
Oh, he does. Even better.
Yeah, that's what half these clips of him come from. He sits there with that fucking moron and they talk.
The guy just wants to be famous. And, you know, God bless. God bless. But, yeah, he sucks.
I would just like to say, God, do not bless.
Yeah, he's disparaging our profession. Jeez, Molly.
Yeah, that's right. Podcasting is serious business.
I hate when people say, you have the same job as Ted Cruz.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's face it, after a night with drinks, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to. I have to make a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is until I found ZBiotics.
ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic.
It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking.
Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut.
It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day.
ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow.
So, I first gave ZBiotics a try when I was having an existential crisis at a Dave & Buster's. I drank it before my first Dangerous Waters punch, and you wouldn't believe how on top of my game, no pun intended, I felt the very next morning.
Vacations, weddings, birthdays, and reunions. There's so much going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now.
Go to zbiotics.com/abnormal to get 15% off your first order when you use abnormal at checkout. Zbiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember to head to zbiotics.com/abnormal and use the code abnormal at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Katie Turr is a correspondent for NBC News, as well as an anchor for MSNBC Reports and the author of Rough Draft, a memoir.
Welcome to the new abnormal, Katie Turr.
Molly. Thanks for having me.
We're always happy to have fancy anchor women here.
So fancy.
And also, we have this connection, which is that we are both edited by the same wonderful editor, Julia Chaffetz, at One Signal Press, which I want to say, A, because we both love her, and B, because it's a little bit of a conflict. So I always want to just like say that right away.
But truth be told, we became friends.
That's right.
Before the Julia connection was made.
That's right. Exactly. But, you know, I always feel like it's good to know.
It's good to know.
When you're interviewing a friend. And then it seems even more impressive when I ask you about things in the book. This is like a real book. First of all, we interview people a lot where it's clear they haven't written the book or perhaps even read the book. And so it is always nice, you know, this is like a real book with real writing and real stories in it. And I am particularly impressed by, I mean, this is probably pretty hard to write. Discuss.
It was really hard to write. Let me ask you this I'll tell you this. I read you had an article about your childhood and your mom and your dad.
Yeah.
I forgot which publication it was in. I want to say it was The Times. I'm not sure. And I remember reading it a few years back and thinking, like, this is really good writing. This is a really interesting story. And it brought up the intention that I've always had, or this, you know, foregone conclusion that eventually I would have to write down my own story of childhood, my parents. And I think that was, you know, a little bit of an incentive to push me forward with this idea when I found myself with a book contract and without the book that I was originally intended to write.
Oh, I had that too. We have these very similar childhoods. I feel like you're a little younger than I am, maybe.
Maybe a hair younger. I'm 38.
Oh, that's annoying. All right. Well, we'll still accept you, even though you are 5 years younger than I am. But you have this childhood that is a media childhood, but in a very interesting and strange way. Will you tell our listeners about that?
So I grew up in a helicopter, quite literally. I grew up in a helicopter. I spent more time in a helicopter than I did in my own bed. And that is because my parents were helicopter news journalists. They pioneered the genre. If you watch television in the 80s or 90s, you saw my parents work. If you saw Police Pursuit, that was my parents. If you saw the Reginald Denny beating, the guy that got pulled out of the red gravel truck during the LA riots, that was my parents' video. If you saw OJ being followed by the cops on that slow speed pursuit, that was my parents. Any video that came out of Los Angeles in the 80s and 90s was most likely shot by my parents. They even had video of Madonna giving my dad the finger on her wedding day in her wedding dress.
With Sean Penn.
Yeah, with Sean Penn.
Yeah. Were you in the helicopter for that or no?
I was not in the helicopter for that, unfortunately. I think I would have been thrilled, but maybe a little saddened to see Madonna, the material girl, not being nice to us.
That is an amazing story.
It is incredible. That's just the beginning. I mean, like, he almost got into a fist fight with Sean Penn and Axl Rose. My dad did at the time. My dad got into multiple fights with police officers. One point punched my dad in the chest or the face. It's on camera. Why? It was a wild and tumultuous childhood. Wild and fun because we lived in a helicopter, and tumultuous because my dad, all of that fueled his success, also fueled his a scary side of his personality, a dangerous and sometimes violent side of his personality. And Molly, can I just make a note on pronouns? My dad transitioned in 2013. My dad is now, Bob Ter is now Zoe Ter. My dad is a woman. And I call her my dad because she is my dad. I've had this conversation with her about it. But when I'm talking about my memories before the transition, those memories are of my father as Bob Ter. And so that's when I use the he pronoun. After that, I use the she. I try to be as consistent as possible. Just in full honesty, full disclosure, it's kind of hard to rewire your brain when you have so much history with the person. So no disrespect. I am trying my hardest and I want to get that out there.
Well, it's super interesting too, because it is, there are a group of men who have transitioned to being women in that later in life, which is, I mean, because also he's this, isn't he sort of the same vintage as Caitlyn Jenner?
Yeah. And my dad would say that it's actually not surprising to have somebody who maybe seemed very testosterone driven, very male seeming. He says that it's not surprising to have them transition sometime later in life, that mask is hiding a lot more, she says, at least.
And your parents are divorced.
My parents are divorced. They told me they were getting divorced on the day of my college graduation.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. We are no longer together.
Well, that was good. They stayed together for you to go to college. That was nice of them.
They did. The day I graduated, my mom showed up alone. and my dad was at a, you know, sitting somewhere else. And I said, what the heck? Why aren't you guys sitting together? I mean, they had a rocky relationship too. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
And my mom said, I'm done. I'm leaving him. I got you through college. You're on your own. Like I've done my job. It's over. And it wasn't until much later when I asked her, I said, well, you know, why that moment? Like, why did you choose my college graduation? Maybe because you waited till the next day. And she said, I couldn't. Because the night before, she had come home and my dad was working on an edit for a documentary that he was working on. And she asked my dad how it was going. And he turned around and punched her in the chest. Like, no, it's not going well. He just turned around and punched her in the chest. And she said, I'm done with this violence. This is it. I'm not doing it anymore.
Oh, man. It's hard to argue with that.
No, I know. But I mean, at the time, you know, I'm 20, maybe 21. And for me, it felt like, because I'd grown up in this very violent, tumultuous, erratic, inconsistent childhood, with this inconsistent childhood, with this marriage that, you know, was volatile. And so for me, it seemed normal. Like all of this seemed normal. And so when my mom decided to leave him on that day, it was kind of hard to understand why that was the breaking point, because there had been so many other instances in the past. And I was a dumb 21-year-old kid who didn't really understand what she was going through.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was bad and I had tried to intervene and I got very angry at my dad at points and I confronted him when I was a teenager and I told him to fuck off and to stop it and to get out of our lives. Punched me at one point. I remember thinking like, wow, you've really crossed a line here. But even with all of that, because it was so normal in my head, because it felt like so much a part of just a relationship, that even then I still thought, wow, I wish you could have kept it together for longer, to my mom, which is crazy looking back on it.
You know, it's funny because it's like I also had one of those like insane childhoods. Like we had this stalker who used to live at the bottom of our driveway. I remember thinking like, this is normal. Like, this is what people do. Like, this is how people live. Like, you know, getting all this mail that would be scary. Like, and it's funny. Wait till your kids get older, because my kids will, like, complain about their childhoods. And I'm like, no, no. I'm like, no, no. I'm like, have you met grandma? I was like, now imagine she's your mother.
I think that that's a really interesting question, though. And this is something that Tony and I, my husband and I, kind of struggle with, because Tony also had a crazy childhood, to, you know, put it diplomatically. His dad was a big time drug smuggler, only marijuana.
Oh, good for him.
Good for him.
It's important to make that distinction, because I had thought, I mean, I feel like.
No, but at the time they thought it's marijuana. It's not a bad thing. It's, you know,
right.
We're helping the world. We're not hurting it.
Yeah.
And He was also just addicted to coke.
Right.
Disappeared when Tony was 10. Tony's mom moved them to Maryland. He went from a lot to very little in terms of finances. And his whole childhood was upended. His dad was also violent. And so when we have conversations, we look at ourselves now and we think, you know, why are we the way that we are? Why are we two people who have found each other and eschewed the erratic natures, eschewed violence, tried to be consistent with each other, are relatively calm, successful broadcasters? Like, how did we get to this? How did we overcome all that? And do we need to fuck up our own children a little bit more to make them successful adults? But is their childhood going to be, is it going to be too normal?
No, that's crazy. I say this as someone who had a very fucked up childhood and then had kids who have a very normal childhood and are quite cloistered from all of that. No.
No.
It's better for them to have the same childhood. We are in the very, very small minority of people who don't like die of drug overdoses who had our childhoods. And like, for whatever reason, I mean, for me, I know I got out because I got sober when I was 19. For you, you know, who knows what it was that was the thing that got you out of that, you know, not being in that cycle the way that your parents, you know what I mean?
I think it was running away from the family in Los Angeles and just packing a bag and not going back.
Wait, can we talk? Can we talk about Keith Olbermann?
Sure.
One of the things I love about your story is like, you keep having successes and people keep being like, well, you're only here because of this. I feel like that's such an important metaphor for how women are treated today.
I think a lot of women can relate to this. A lot of people who are make excuses for their success. I dated Keith when I left Los Angeles and I was running away from a whole lot. My dad at the time was spiraling and was really depressed and was installed in the book, and I won't retell all of it, but he at the time was spiraling, and I felt like he was, if I didn't get out, I was going to drown alongside him. And so I picked up and I moved across the country, and I didn't have anywhere to live. And I started dating Keith Olbermann, and he said, why don't you stay with me? And I said, great. And I liked him. I liked him a lot. I mean, I really liked him a lot. The guy was very smart. He was doing a show called Countdown. It was the early days of Countdown, mid days of Countdown, which I thought was incredibly smart.
Yeah,
and provocative. It's really smart. I mean, yeah. In terms of broadcasting, he was unparalleled. I mean, he could write a beautiful script. He could deliver a beautiful script. He was funny. He could hold your attention, and he was smart. And I was really attracted to the funny and the smart. And so we had a good relationship for a few years, broke up on amicable terms, stayed friends for a while. But that relationship followed me for a long time in my career. And to this day, when somebody tries to bring me down to say, oh, she's only in the job that she's in, they'll bring up Keith Olbermann. When they try to diminish me, and I get it on Twitter every single day.
Jesus Christ.
Some person telling me that I, you know, screwed my way to the top. Now I don't really care.
Right.
Now I roll my eyes. But there was a time in my life where it really haunted me, and it made me feel small and worthless. And I found myself closed off to my colleagues. I didn't trust anyone. I assumed if you were being nice to me that you had an ulterior motive.
To get to Keith Olbermann. No, just kidding. It's so preposterous because, like, you're so much more successful than he is now. But I guess, like, you know, it's so the playbook is why I brought it up, because it is so the play, you know, the playbook of diminishing women.
I mean, Rick Grinnell, who was a Romney guy and then a Trump guy, I think he very publicly said it on Twitter in the middle of the campaign. Like, he tried to call to apologize to me when he was trying to get an ambassadorship. Because he didn't want the negative coverage.
I don't know. It just feels like the kind of traditional diminishing woman playbook.
Of course. It's exactly, I mean, you felt it. Every woman has felt some version of that.
Yeah. One of the things that I like to ask people, because I think it's important, is like, what did you learn when writing this book?
So I learned a lot. I was really hesitant to write this book. I knew that it had to be written, but I've told you about this. I have balls of anxiety that are knots of it that are stuck inside of me, especially as this is about to come out. It comes out in a few days. We're pre-recording this. And
yes.
And I'm nervous. I'm really, really nervous. I have nightmares because I don't want to hurt my dad's feelings.
Right.
And there's that. And I also, and I know this is going to be hard for my dad to read. I know it's going to be hard for her to read. It would be hard for anybody to read. I also don't want all of that bad stuff to completely overtake a lot of the good stuff, because there were, and you, when you read it, you'll see this, there were really fun parts of the childhood that made me who I am today. And there are parts of my dad's personality and her drive that have helped me so much with where I am today, why I am in the position I am, why I'm successful, why I'm good at this job, why I could write a book. I also don't like the idea of being labeled a victim. I think that that's, I don't want that to become an identity of mine.
Right.
But in terms of when I wrote the book, I started to learn how I really felt about my childhood, how I could have both anger and frustration and rage toward how I grew up, and love and compassion and halcyon memories about it. How you can have both of those things at the same time. And as I was writing it, I think it became clear to me that it's okay to be in the position I'm in now, which is a position of estrangement from my dad.
So interesting. I mean, I was so sure I had forgiven my parents everything. And then my mother got, you know, memory stuff, and I got just so mad at her again. So it is really a process, I think.
And I think it changes forever. I mean, it's everything and it's nothing.
Yeah. No, parents are the final frontier of just, you know, this kind of thing. But I do think I do think that our kids, that normal childhood is enough trauma that they don't have to go through what we went through to be high functioning adults. And in fact, it's better if they don't, you know?
Yeah.
But it is complicated, and it's so interesting. And you're back from maternity leave for a few months, and you're also, people can watch you on MSNBC at 2:00.
Yeah, they can. I have been back for a few months now. 2:00, all about, and then we're doing all sorts of special coverage now for the January 6th hearings. And the last chapter of the book is about the insurrection.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's fantastic. Thank you so much, Katie Turr.
Molly, thank you as well. I love talking to you about this stuff, because you want to know what? We talk about this stuff when we're not doing a podcast.
It's true.
On that note, we'll wrap this episode of The New Abnormal from The Daily Beast. In future episodes, we'll be talking to smart folks from The Daily Beast and beyond, from media, culture, politics, and science, will help us understand what's happening to our country and the world. We hope you'll subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app and share the show on social media. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again on the next episode.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.